Jeff J. Brown is the author of numerous books, and his latest being China Rising, Capitalist Roads, Socialist Destinations. And you can find his writings and radio show on chinarising.puntopress.com. Welcome again, Jeff.
Great to hear your voice, Arav. It's been about, what, 10 months or something like that? So it's a real pleasure.
Yes, and since then, your new book has come out, which I'd like to talk about a bit. It's called China Rising, and the first few chapters discuss the deep state and how the West was lost. You start your book describing the American power structure known as the deep state, and you qualify this by stating that one cannot understand the rise of China without understanding the West's imperial history and its decline. So what is it in this moment in time in the recent decades that has instigated the economic and political decline of Europe and America?
I think it's a great question, Hervé. I think it's just the cycle of empire. This has been going on since 1492, when the pirate Columbus, landed in the Bahamas, and it's just run its course. Nothing lasts forever, and most empires last 200 to 300 years. And I would say that this one, has lasted 5 centuries, and it's just exhausted itself. And there's this cycle that goes, in empire where, the fascism eventually takes place, it has to be instigated at home to control the people. The empire, expands its boundaries, whether it's Rome into England and the Middle East and Africa, Eastern Europe, and it finally exhausts itself, trying to collect human and natural resources from the colonies, and it just runs out of gas and eventually it implodes. And this has been written about numerous times in a number of books, including Jared Diamond and others. And you can just see it. I mean, the United States has 1,000 military bases all over the world. But look what NATO has done to Asia and Africa and the Middle East. Look what America's, is doing in Venezuela and Argentina and Brazil. It will eventually collapse. I'd like to think that it will happen sooner than later. I'm 62 and I'd like to see it happen in my lifetime, but to be honest, it may take decades more, but it cannot last forever. It will, with all the debt and negative interest rates and the economy really not growing and the misery of Westerners becoming more and more dire by the day, it will eventually implode. But you may be around to see it, but I may not, but it will happen eventually.
And you mentioned Jared Diamond. Another author I just discovered is Peter Turchin, who wrote The Age of Discord, which I recommend. Do you think Trump...
Okay, cool.
Uh-huh. Yeah, Peter Turchin. And he self-published as well. Does Trump change anything, do you think? Is he part of the deep state? Will he slow or accelerate America's decline?
I think that... To be honest with you, nobody makes it into the White House that's not a member of the deep state. I mean, he is a part of the power structure. He is a child of, the Rothschilds and the banking, the oil bankers. But I think that they realized, our owners, as I call them, I think they realized that, Clinton was, more of the same, and that they will use Trump as a way to try to tone down, to try to pull back, basically, and to try to, he was on the phone with President Xi Jinping of China yesterday, talking about how he is that they need to cooperate. He has already his first interview. Yesterday, he said that he, will probably remove support of the Syrian rebels. And of course, ISIS and the rebels are all the same thing. They're all American proxy armies. Al-Qaeda is a U.S. proxy army being financed via, Qatar and Saudi Arabia. But it's all American, NATO-backed forces. And so I think what is happening is you know, the deep state is realizing that it's spinning out of control. And instead of having another certified, you know, war criminal in the White House, like Obama and Bush and Bill Clinton and George H. Bush and Reagan and going on and on and on back, that they can use Trump as a way to try to sort of, you know, reel back some of the excesses. I think the Ukraine was the colossal failure of the Ukraine and that genocidal, you know, color revolution was a wake up call. And the Russians, you know, the Crimeans asking the Russians, you know, to come back into the motherland. I think that was a wake up call. You know, MH17 was a Western perpetrated false flag, and it didn't work. I mean, they've tried everything in the book, and you know what's causing this, Arabe? What's causing this is that the West is no longer able to just, you know, stomp on, you know, powerless dark skinned people in Africa and South America. They are now having to deal with two very powerful, formidable opponents, and that is China and Russia. So I think, you know, they don't want to admit it, but to be honest with you, the rise of China and the incredible governance and hard-nosedness, if I could make a word out of that, of, you know, stubbornness of the Russians to just keep after it. And I think that is what is basically bringing the deep state to the table. I mean, you know, sort of a symbolic table. And I think Trump is their answer to try to defuse Syria, to try to, you know, defuse the South China Sea. It's a joke. I mean, these are just jokes, but millions of people are dying and it's not working. And in fact, the West is losing. And when you're in a corner like that and you're getting your butts kicked, you know, it's time to change gears. And I think that Trump is the reason that he was chosen. You know, American presidents are not elected. They're selected. And just like Obama and Bush and everybody else. So I think he is their answer to try to come off of the West high horse and try to maintain the colonial imperial structure. But not be quite so genocidal and violent about it across the planet.
Indeed, the empire does seem to have stretched itself too thin, like Rome in the past, and it seems they're taking on too many things. And as you mentioned, it seems to be their strategies are failing, the color revolutions, the proxy armies and mercenaries and so forth. You already mentioned it, but I was going to cite a recent study by the World Economic Forum that said by 2030, America will no longer be the superpower. Rather, it will join a club of global powers like in the heyday of imperialism in the 18th century with China and Russia. So what do you think that America will look like in the future? Power will balance out and they will be on equal standing with the rest?
Well, I think that out of all of them, you know, China will probably come out on top. First of all, China prints its own money. All of the banks in China are state-owned by the people. The U.S., Japan, even Russia, Europe, the European Central Bank, the American Federal, you know, Reserve System, the Japanese Central Bank, most of the countries of the world are in debt to the, you know, the oil banking families, the, you know, the Rothschilds, the, you know, the Morgans, the Stanleys, the Carnegies, you know, that whole, you know, aristocratic, you know, line that, you know, goes back, you know, hundreds of years. You know, they're the real owners of the West. And even the Russian Central Bank also had, you know, does not print its own money. It borrows money from these same, you know, owners. And so I think what's going to end up happening is, since China is a well-run socialist, you know, country that has, you know, a massive state-owned sector, state-owned financial sector, state-owned banks, you know, state-owned insurance companies, every square centimeter of the People's Republic is people owned. There's no private real estate here. And so I think what's going to end up happening is even Russia, you know, they better watch it, you know, because if they owe tons of money to, you know, the oil banking families, they're at risk. But the most that are at risk are England, the United States, and Japan. Those are the three most indebted countries in the world as a percentage of GNP. I mean, they're all like, you know, 200 to 500%. Well, actually 300 to 500% of GNP. So I see by 20, and it's funny you mentioned, Hervé, that the 2030, because that is actually, you know, one of the dates that the Chinese have picked as a foundational date to to establish, you know, China as a, you know, as a moderately prosperous, you know, socialist country. So I see China basically at the top. China is going to obviously want to, you know, cultivate, you know, Russia as a partner, because they have a lot to answer, you know, to help each other with as far as the, you know, Eurasian continent. And China, with its, you know, Belts and Roads, this $1.6 trillion investment project in Eurasia, which is in inflation adjusted terms is 11 times as big as the Marshall Plan in post-war Europe, 11 times bigger than the Marshall Plan. And of course, Russia is just, you know, straddles Asia. So I think China will definitely try to cultivate Russia. And I see, you know, by 2030, if the United States and Europe and Japan can keep the Bretton Woods, you know, financial, pie in the sky, you know, levitated in midair until 2030, you know, good on them. But eventually, you know, people are going to lose faith in the dollar and realize that the tens of trillions of dollars that the United States and Japan and England and the European Central Bank are printing, you know, football fields of, you know, photocopy machines, you know, printing, you know, euros, yen, and pounds and dollars. I mean, eventually it's going to, people are just going to say, okay, enough's enough. And this has happened, you know, in so many other cases, Genoa, Italy, you know, the Dutch florin, you know, the French franc, the British pound. I mean, all of these imperial currencies, you know, eventually imploded, and the dollar and the euro and the yen will too. So that will be the determining factor, you know, whether it happens by 2030 or after 2030. But I still see China coming out on top out of all of them.
And how do the Chinese see themselves in this mess? I mean, do you sense a little bit of Chinese exceptionalism brewing?
Well, you know, I'm going to be giving a talk to the Beijing Academy of Social Sciences in December, and that's what China has to guard against. That's what China has to worry about, is hubris. You know, that's the ultimate, you know, poisonous drink of every empire, is this idea that, you know, we are exceptional, we are better. But I think that the Chinese, if anybody can pull it off, they can. You know, people tend to, you know, Westerners are so insular and so focused on, you know, the Mediterranean basin as civilization. But China has the longest running continuous civilization in human history, going back 5,000 years. I mean, we're talking 3,000 BC. And it's the same people, the same language, cultures that make it up, and they are used to being the big dog, you know, on the hill. They have been the big dog. They were the world's biggest economy and always the most populated civilization in human history. They were the world's biggest economy until 1872. I mean, for thousands of years, they were the world's biggest economy. For thousands of years, regional regional players have come to pay tribute to China and benefited from the tribute and you know the Chinese are not, they have no expansionist colonial DNA in their other than Vietnam, unfortunately, North Vietnam they colonized, and a little bit Korea, but they could have gone all the way to Lisbon, Europe, back when they were seafaring, almost 100 years before Columbus. They could have taken over the entire world, and they didn't do it. But so I think this goes back to Buddhism. Buddhism is different than Christianity. It is not linear. It's very cyclical and holistic and elliptical. And so I think if any civilization can pull this off and become the head of, again, reclaim their head of the, at the head of the world table, but this time with the West and the Americas and who didn't even know hardly that China even existed back then, but that and recognize that, I think the Chinese have a better chance of pulling it off than the West, that's for sure.
And you mentioned head of the table, and something interesting, if people haven't heard about it, that Interpol, I believe the presidency and vice presidency of Interpol has just been filled with a Russian and a Chinese representative.
So. Yeah, a Russian president and a Russian vice president, which is pretty interesting.
So that's another,
that would have been unimaginable 10 years ago.
Another indicator. What is your analysis of the South China Sea and the shift in dynamic regarding the Philippines and Duterte? Some might call him the Filipino Trump in a way, Japan and some of the Southeast Asian countries.
Well, the U.S. is already lost. I mean, they can't even park their, highly touted, aircraft carriers within 1500 kilometers of the Chinese coast, because the Chinese now have aircraft carrier missiles that would destroy them in 2 minutes. They've already lost. I mean, this is China's backyard. The imperial overreach, and I think again, and I think this is something that the West owners are going to reel back. Duterte. I even wear a Duterte election bracelet that I got when I was in the Philippines. He is literally changing the geopolitical and diplomatic and economic landscape of Asia. And I'm not in favor of his drug enforcement policy in the Philippines, but he's killing thousands. The West is killing millions. Obama and Cameron and Hollande and on and on and on. They've killed millions, and so he's killed 3,000 or 4,000 people. Some innocent people have died. But what he is doing in Asia, he is now saying the United States military is going to be evicted in 2018. He's already kicked out the special forces in Mindanao. He's already suggested that the bus station market bombing a couple of months ago was done by the special forces in Mindanao through the Abu Sayyaf group, which he says is an American front, which is true. So he is the first leader to really stand up and say the emperor is wearing no clothes. And this is profound. I mean, this is really, really profound. And he's now asking the Ministry of State Security in China. They're now training his people to keep him from getting assassinated. I think if the CIA could have assassinated him, they probably already would have. He's amazing. And then he emboldened, I think, the Prime Minister of Malaysia, who went to Beijing and signed deals and canceled a military deal with the United States. So basically America's, South China Sea. And it was Clinton who started the pivot. It wasn't Obama. It was Hillary Clinton that started it. It's imploding. And so, I think that was another reason that Trump was selected, is so that he can kind of gracefully save face and pull the United States out of the South China Sea fiasco. China will, like it has for 5,000 years, negotiate bilaterally and regionally with its neighbors and partners, and they'll come up with some cooperative deal. The Chinese will allow other countries to help, develop the South China Sea, and it'll be mutually beneficial, as Xi Jinping says, win-win. That's the way the Chinese have been doing business for millennia, and that's not going to change.
Yeah, it's really impressive to witness these tectonic geopolitical shifts and realignments that come along every, once in a generation or couple generations. Is there any final key point that you'd like to mention that you'd like to mention, or something we may have missed?
Well, I just think you have got Westerners out there who are listening to this program, quit watching BBC, quit watching CNN, quit watching MSNBC, quit reading the Washington Post, the New York Times, the Financial Times, Le Figaro in France, and if you want to keep reading them, at least get out and get outside of the Great Western Firewall, as I call it. That's the most frustrating thing for me, is people in the West just do not realize how literally brainwashed and manipulated they are. And I know I'm very empathetic, because I was too. I mean, it wasn't until I came back to China in 2010, my second trip here, the scales of empire and racism and colonialism and false flags, all of the scales all finally started falling off my eyes, and where I could really see how the world works. And I just encourage people, and I'm not saying that my website's the greatest thing since sliced bread, but my group, I mean, I actually, in my book, I think you remember, Hervé, I actually list a bunch of websites, in my book, my recommended reading. And if you get China Rising, just go through that list. Start watching, start reading and watching Telesur, so you get a viewpoint of South America and Latin America from the standpoint of the 85%, the dark skinned peoples of the world. Start watching and reading Press TV, so you get a viewpoint of the Muslim world, that's not Western oriented. Start watching and listening to RT, Russia Today. Everybody should be looking at least, once a week at, People's Daily and here in China, to see what the Chinese people are saying about the world. That's what I really would like to encourage people, is just start looking at these other websites and make it a habit to look at them. I don't even listen. I just quit even looking at BBC and all those websites. I don't even have to look at them anymore, because I know it's just propaganda. And people can say, well, those other people are propaganda too. Well, if it is, then it's the propaganda of the 85% of the world's people who are the have-nots versus the 15% who own planet Earth. And if I want to, and I would encourage people, for the 21st century, what really matters, what the 85%, dark skinned people care and think about, and their governments, or the 15%, what I call Uranglo land, and their people and their owners, you owe it to yourself to at least look at both sides. And so that would be my clarion call for, to end this interview, branch out and open, be willing to open your eyes and look at the world from the perspective of the downtrodden masses who have been exploited, and their natural resources, by the West for the last 500 years.
And I can definitely relate to that. And I think we see a lot of people are abandoning the the Western old propaganda and checking out this new media. So people can visit your radio show podcast. You've got a few previous books like 44 Days. Your current one is China Rising, and you're coming out with a few others. That's China Rising.
Yeah, okay. Got one coming out in December. Yeah, December, and then next year I've got two more coming out.
Okay, so people can go to your website and check those out.